Welcome to a special release series from Christ Church of Orinogo. We're having conversations about an impact partner of ours, Black Box International. My name is Drake Holderman. I serve as the Missional Impact Minister here at Christ Church, and I'm joined by Chad Brown. Chad is a Jesus follower and worships with us here at Christ Church. He's a husband, a dad, and serves as the ministry director at Schuber Mitchell Homes. In the first episode of this series, I sat down with Wade Landers and Roger Twitchell, both leaders at Black Box International, and had a conversation with them around human trafficking and aftercare. If you haven't listened to that episode, I would encourage you to go there first and then come back to this episode. Chad and I are going to have a conversation around the question, how can those of us at Christ Church make an impact with Black Box? I hope this conversation encourages you toward prayer, generosity, and involvement. What's up, Chad? How are you?
Hey, Drake. Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on here. Here's why you are a part of this podcast. You and I got to go on a trip with Black Box to the Dominican Republic, separate of one another. You went with Schuber Mitchell, and I went with Christ Church, which was fun because we both go to Christ Church, and a lot of people from Christ Church on the trip, and really fun because we also bumped into each other for the first time in the Dominican in immigration, literally bumped into one another in line.
Which you were coming from Miami, and we were coming from Atlanta, and we literally walked off our separate jetways into each other.
We did. It was really fun, and you picked the best line to get through immigration. You beat me through, and I'm jealous of you for that. This isn't really the topic of the podcast today, but I'm curious, as a ministry director, what do you do when you work for a for-profit organization as their ministry director? Like, why did they send you to the Dominican for Black Box?
Well, a part of the ministry at Schuber Mitchell is thinking outside of Schuber Mitchell, the ministries, whether local or global, that we support. We meet with them periodically, but a really cool opportunity to actually go away, know, and see one of our ministry partners at work.
Right.
And so we support Black Box International, and really been able to get to know Wade really well over the past year. And I worked with several others on the team at various times in my life in a weird sort of roundabout way, but just had an opportunity to go see, like you did, to see them on the field, boots on the ground, what they're doing.
Yeah. So neither one of us are really involved in anti-trafficking efforts on a day-to-day basis, right? Mm-hmm. The organizations that we work for, Schuber Mitchell Homes, Christ Church of Orinogo, are ministry partners with, and we both had the opportunity to go. And the purpose of the trip was to, learn, be educated, and spend a lot of time in prayer. So the reason I asked you and for me as well to be on this conversation is we're just dudes at Christ Church of Orinogo here in Southwest Missouri who want to follow Jesus, and we know that Christ has a heart for justice and for care for people who have been victimized, like the boys that Black Box serves. And a question that has been on my mind a lot since that trip is, how can those of us at Christ Church help Black Box in their ministry toward these boys and caring for their souls? And I really want to hear your thoughts on this and some of your reflections from the trip. So, pre-trip, when it comes to human trafficking, what did you envision? Like, what were your thoughts on trafficking? What did you think about when you thought of trafficking just before the trip?
Yeah. Well, the first time I'd ever even heard that concept, heard of human trafficking, would have been around 2006, 2007. CIY, or Christ in Youth, produced a film, a short film called Bought, B-A-H-T. If you've never seen it, it's a pretty eye-opening film about that industry. And that's the first time I'd really heard of that as a concept, but then also got to know Rafa House, a ministry that's headquarters is in Joplin.
Yep.
And so really got to know Rafa House through that, and all these years later, really, I know that trafficking happens with boys and girls. Mm-hmm. But really, when I thought about trafficking, I thought about it being girls.
Yeah.
These poor young women, and never really gave much of a thought about it being boys. And I know you talked to Wade and Roger and heard the story of Black Box, but just very, very jolting to see and sad to see that there's a need for a ministry like this for young boys.
Right. So it's personal. Yeah. I have two boys. You have two boys.
Yep, right. That's right.
It's personal to those of us. And even on the trip, we Black Box does a great job of keeping the boys' identity anonymous and confidential, right? But when we went to church and worshiped where they worship, you could assume who were some of the boys, right? And
right.
Really put a face and name to these victims. They're real people. They're real boys. They're real sons, just like our sons are, you know? And when you think of when you think of human trafficking, most people do think of women or girls. And Wade and Roger, you know, talked about how the efforts when it comes to caring for boys who have been rescued from trafficking is very minimal. There's less than 100 beds in the world when it comes to aftercare for boys. So Black Box is really on the forefront of this kind of ministry. And it's a very eye-opening trip. What are some of the things you saw when we were in the Dominican that, you know, taught you about this ministry and also this problem of human trafficking when it comes to young boys?
Yeah. Several times through the weekend, they took us to just various places where the stuff went on. Three specifically. One was on Saturday morning, we went to a beach. Mm-hmm. You remember? Very touristy. Lots of families, lots of couples. You know, it was the place to be,
right.
And gorgeous setting.
Beautiful! Deep blue waters.
Yeah, and Wade led us through a exercise, just a sort of a thinking exercise. You know, and then he talked about how beautiful but broken
right.
this place is, because as beautiful as it is, and as fun as it seemed to be. This is where young boys would be brought onto the beach or watched from afar as they, you know, proposition, you know, as they offer themselves. And so we walked up and down the beach praying and just trying to grapple with how this even exists in this beautiful place. One thought in that moment we talked about later was how, you know, a lot of us will use, you know, maybe you use the sounds of the ocean for white noise as you're going to sleep.
Yes.
Or, you know, somebody might set a picture of the beach on their desktop wallpaper to be calming and peaceful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful picture, beautiful sound for most people.
Right. But maybe for these boys, that's a triggering memory of trauma. And so that was something that was sort of hard to wrestle with. But that was the first place we went. And the second one, and probably the one that impacted me the most, was, I believe it was that same day, later in the evening.
It was that evening, yeah.
Yeah, where they dropped us off in front of what where we would eat dinner.
Mm-hmm.
We split into three groups, and three groups of about four, and we went out into the city.
Yeah.
And just to pray and to just get a feel for what life is like there. And so our group, first we went down to this beach, and it was a different beach. This was where local families went,
right.
You know, after school, after work.
The first beach was a lot of European tourists.
Exactly.
This one was a lot of Dominicans. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you could tell they were taking their dinner down to the beach just to, it's like as if we took our kids to the park or something,
right.
You know. And so they're all there, and it's a happy place. And we stood there taking it all in, and then we walked about a block or two over.
Yeah.
And these were some rough streets.
Yeah.
Kind of like, are we good here?
Yeah.
Are we okay here?
Yeah.
But in the course of about 45 minutes, at least our group, we had probably two or three different club promoters or bar promoters approach us, asking us if we wanted girls.
Right.
And it was weird, too, because it was like a part of the menu. It was like, hey, we got fresh fish, we got music, we've got drinks, we got girls. You want girls? We got 25 girls. And I'm like, what? And they don't just, you don't just say no and walk on. They follow you down the street.
Oh, yeah, persistent, yeah.
Yeah, and so that was a pretty, I don't even know what to call it. It was a heavy night.
Heavy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a weird a collision in your soul, right? You're like, this is a problem, and I've just been offered, you know, this thing that I detest with every fiber of my being. I remember the first time that ever happened to me. I was in Poland with one of my friends who's a missionary, Mac and Olivia Johnson, who are impact partners. And it was happening so much. He had to teach me Polish how to say no thank you because it was happening so much. But yeah, it's hard. And then that evening we were at that restaurant after we went to the prayer. And I don't know if you had seen this or not, but we were leaving and Roger Twitchell looked at me and said, "Hey, look over at that table." And it was probably a 65-year-old man and probably European or American, and then a 20-year-old maybe, Dominican girl, and they did not belong at a table at a date together. And Roger said, "What's happening there is he's paying for the full experience to feel like he has someone who loves him and is going to offer him sex at the end of the night, that sort of thing." And it was hard to see, right?
Yeah.
That pain and that experience was a great teacher to really show us the problem of what is going on. So I appreciate you reflecting on that. So when we think of human trafficking, a lot of people think of the rescue. They think of, when I talk to the boys as a youth pastor and they recognize the problem of human trafficking, they envision themselves as the guys who kick down the door and rescue the kids or the women who have been trafficked, who are enslaved. And there are definitely people out there who do that, but that's not what Black Box does. And they don't apologize for that. They serve a very specific purpose, which is aftercare. And Roger talked a lot about that last week. So did Wade. And I'm curious, when you thought of the term aftercare for trafficking, I had never really reflected on aftercare. And we know now that there's less than 100 beds for boys in the world when it comes to aftercare. What did you learn on this trip when it comes to the ministry that Black Box is doing?
Well, I probably thought aftercare was very similar to how it sounds. You know, it's a place for people to end up. And I think because I was familiar with Rafa House, I had a good idea. But I think exactly what you just said, that was the piece to me that was the learning element was that everybody wants to, like you said, kick down a door.
Right. It's macho,
Yeah, and it's
feels good,
and you're a hero, and you've rescued them, and that is an important piece.
It is. People need to be rescued,
right? But I guess what I hadn't considered was with all of the trauma and the baggage and the pain, the psychological issues, kicking a door down and pulling them out of slavery, and then setting them on a sidewalk and say you're free to go,
right?
Doesn't do the trick. They need. These kids need education. They need, that was one thing that stood out to me was, maybe they've been at this all their life,
right?
And they literally have had no education, and so they're in the home learning. They're getting their basic needs met.
Right.
It was cool to see that they've got in the home a psychologist,
right?
Working with the boys, offering some counseling, and
yeah,
helping them sort through the mental anguish,
yeah,
and the trauma. So I think the big piece for me was just learning just how crucial aftercare is beyond the initial rescue.
Right, because rescue is important. Nobody's denying that, but that's just the beginning of healing. Yeah. They're being removed from their dangerous situation, their position of enslavement, and the work that Black Box specifically does is to help them recover and to heal. And it's a tough labor, it's a long labor. Kicking a door down takes a couple of minutes, and bringing boys out of homes maybe takes the evening. But walking with the boys who have been abused for years,
yeah.
It's the kind of thing that I didn't appreciate as much before the trip as I do now. Being in their home where the boys live and where they are tutored and where they are counseled, and meeting the women and some of the other staff who are with the boys day in and day out. It is a labor of love that is needed for healing. And a lot of these boys, some of them have families to go back to, maybe not a mom or a dad, but an aunt or uncle or grandparent or something like that. Some of the boys will age out, and their closest relationship is with the people, the leaders there at Black Box in the homes.
Yeah.
And just became so aware of how important that is. And what I appreciate, too, is their involvement in the local church. The boys are very involved in the youth group and a part of that, and Black Box is team and their commitment to these boys is long-suffering. It is a labor of love. And I think I just grew in so much gratitude for Black Box when I learned about what they did.
If I can tell just a quick story, yeah. We walked through the home. Mm-hmm. They arranged for the boys to be away.
They were at a soccer game.
They went to a soccer game, right? Yeah. And so it gave us a few hours to just be in their home and to meet the staff and to pray for the staff and to learn. But one particular moment, you remember, we walked through and prayed in the different rooms. And I found myself in one of the boys' bedrooms. There's a bunk bed on one side of the wall and a twin size bed on the other. And I stood there just next to this top bunk with my hand on it praying. Mm-hmm. And I just had this memory of just 2 days prior, you know, Thursday night, I'm getting ready to leave. Mm-hmm. And my own boys, I've tucked them in and they are in bunk beds.
Right.
And my oldest sleeps on the top bunk. And he was sad that I was going to be gone for the weekend. Yeah. And I was standing next to the bed and he wrapped his arms around my neck and he was crying. And mm-hmm. I just, you know, I was holding him for a few minutes. And so then I find myself standing next to this bunk in this house. And I just thought, man, what happens when this kid has a bad dream? Or, you know, I'm not trying to lessen the love and the care that the executive director and the people in that place do.
Yeah.
But, you know, this kid doesn't have a dad, you know, to just stand there and hold him. And so, again, just moment after moment, realizing how the contrast between my kids' lives and the lives of these little boys in this home.
It's different.
Yeah.
It's different, not just the culture, because we have to remember, this is what Wade was talking about, their culture is beautiful, right? I mean, it's fun, it's vibrant, but there's a lot of brokenness. And for these boys who are beautiful boys, their spirits have been broken by abuse, you know, exploitation. And what Black Box is doing and stepping in to fill what somebody else should have done for the boys, to protect them and to love them and to allow them a place to heal.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about something that is harder for me to think about than any of this other things that we've been discussing, and it's the abusers in the situation, the perpetrators, those who are selling or buying children, boys, you know, in Black Box case for sex and abusing them. What thoughts, if you had any thoughts before, what were your thoughts on those people? And then has God taught you anything or reminded you anything about them?
Yeah. Since I first learned about trafficking, I think the perpetrators have always been this nebulous, vague, faceless evil out there, you know?
It's hard to imagine somebody actually doing it.
Right.
Right.
And our thoughts, our prayers, our efforts all go toward the abused, the kids. And, you know, I'm praying for these kids and let's go help these kids and let's go on this medical mission trip, you know, whatever. And, but when it comes to the perpetrators, I pray God's justice to rain down on them, you know?
Right, yeah.
Vengeance and wrath and justice.
Yeah.
And it wasn't me. Somebody on the trip mentioned just that these people are made in the image of God. Mm-hmm. They have souls. Yeah. They are redeemable. Mm-hmm. And that... who knows what God could do with them. And that's something that, as I think about praying for people like that, I think a big part of prayer is the engagement of your imagination.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of our prayers can just be like, be with them, help them, you know,
yes.
Rescue them. But to actually your imagination to engage with prayer and in the days and since our trip, I have just thought, man, God, what could happen if you got a hold of them, that somebody from within, somebody who knows the inner workings of human trafficking, becoming a Christ follower, what could they do?
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, dismantle it from the inside.
What kingdom work could they do?
Yeah. Right, exactly. And so you kind of just don't want to think, you don't want to humanize them.
Right.
You know, but that's the thing, is just praying for their souls. And that's just a baby step.
Yeah.
But then to think through, like, what could God do with them, though? Mm-hmm. You know, it almost becomes an exciting thing to pray about.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. You believe that God can do abundantly more than you can ask or imagine, right? Yeah. Words from Paul in Ephesians. When it comes to people who, you said, nebulous and faceless, but they're real people. Just like the boys who have been victimized are real people.
Right.
The perpetrators are also real people. And somebody brought this to my attention when we were reflecting on this. They're also victims of the enemy, Satan, right?
That's true.
John speaks that Satan's work in the world is to steal, kill, and destroy life. And Satan has worked in their hearts and in their souls to steal their joy and kill their lives. And this is why they're in the place that they're in, because Satan has a reign in their heart. And in that throne of their heart is a place that belongs for Christ to sit. And we should remember that these people made in the Imago Dei, the image of God, Christ can redeem, and his work on the cross can cover their sin, just like it covers our sin. We're not abusers of children or anything like that, but we've lost our patience, we've lost our cool, we do these things, cheat, steal, lie, whatever. And for some reason we think, man, we're better than them. And God's justice and his wrath is real, and sin will be judged for what it is. But these men, these abusers, are redeemable by the blood of Christ. And that is something that I struggled to reconcile in my mind, because I see, like the man I mentioned at the restaurant, when I saw him and he walked by me and he had this kind of smug smirk on his face, it made me angry. Like, I've never become instantly angry like I had in that moment. And I remember now that Christ loves that man, and that man is broken by the enemy, but that man has the beautiful Imago Dei in him that it can be restored and redeemed. And we should be mindful of that and praying for that, because like you said, who knows what God can do with these men who have an inner working with the networks of trafficking, and man, they could maybe dismantle it from the inside out if they allowed Christ to reign in their hearts, you know? So at the end of every day, when we were sitting around, we had a lot of time for reflection and conversation with, you and I got to talk a lot. We got to talk a lot with other people on the trip. And one of the things that I wanted to hear from you again and for you to share from the church is some of the thoughts that God was reminding you of and giving to you and making you more aware of in your own life when you think about the justice that God is bringing to these boys and how you might be playing a part of it or just being aware of what God is doing.
Yeah. I'll try to say this concisely because it was kind of a train of thought when we were sitting out there on the porch. Back to that beach where, not the tourist beach, but the sort of the local family beach. We arrived at that spot and we stood there just looking around at all these families. And I know it sounds kind of obvious that like there are families living their lives around the world, outside of what I'm doing. But to actually be in that space and to realize it, to see it with my eyes.
Right.
That like, man, and I looked at my watch, you know, like about this time I'm leaving my office and heading home.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm leaving, thinking about the work that I've still got left to do tomorrow and the deadlines ahead of me and what my family's going to be doing that night, you know, my own little world, this is all happening.
Yeah.
You know, these families are coming down here and having dinner.
Mm-hmm.
But also a block away, people are selling other people.
Yeah.
You know, and so it just encouraged me in that moment, standing there, like, I gotta think more outside of my own world.
Yeah.
There's such a bigger thing at work here. But then we sat on the porch and we were talking about that. And it was then I remembered this line, from a Dallas Willard book. He wrote this book called The Divine Conspiracy. It is a must read.
Yeah.
It's an amazing book, but in it, he really breaks down, dissects the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5-7. Specifically, when he's talking about the Lord's Prayer, he gets to that part, you know, may your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And before I get to Dallas's thoughts, I know if you're like me, every time I've ever prayed that or read that, I read meaning into it. Like, may your kingdom come to me means may you come down and right all the wrongs in the world, mm-hmm. bring justice, fix our culture, our brokenness. You know, it just, it's very much like a, hey, fix the world kind of thing.
Right.
Right. And that's an easy prayer to pray when you have inside you pride and sin and things, mm-hmm. you know, it's like,
yes.
fix everybody else.
Right.
May your kingdom come. And Dallas Willard, he talks about how we all have these little kingdoms. A kingdom is your range or the range of your effective will.
Hmm.
And so I have a range of my effective will, my kingdom. And that's yes. my preferences, my goals, my initiatives, the things I want to decide on and plan, and mm-hmm. I want to make this what I want it to be. That's my kingdom. And if I pray, may your kingdom come, may your will be done, Dallas Willard's saying, what you really should be saying there is, Jesus, may your kingdom come displace my kingdom.
Right.
Like a giant boulder in a shallow pond, mm-hmm. you know, just push my kingdom out of me and fill me up with your kingdom. And so that's a long train of thought, but this was all sort of on that Saturday as we were looking at all this life happening around us, and good stuff and also mm-hmm. horrifying stuff.
Yeah.
You know, what does it look like for his kingdom to displace mine? And I think that means if I'm going to be allegiant to the king, to his kingdom, then I need to change, or at least allow him to change my preferences.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of my goals.
Sure.
Yeah.
His kingdom comes in me. You know, that's my prayer. Yeah. Kingdom, may your kingdom come in me. And like you said, displace everything that I thought I had control over.
Yeah.
May you sanctify and redeem.
And that might mean like really leaning in a little bit more on something like Black Box.
Yeah.
You know, or it may just mean, well, I just need to develop a routine. When I'm driving home, I know I'm going to pray for what's happening in the DR
right.
on my drive home, because I've seen that moment of the day with my own eyes.
Yeah.
You know,
You give up your meals that you enjoy to fast once a week and think about Black Box, or
yeah.
turn off Spotify or Apple Music and on the way home. And
you
know, become more aware of your own trespass in your own heart of the throne that belongs to Jesus,
mm-hmm.
and allow him to sit there and replace and reorganize all the desires of your heart for his glory and for the good of this world. And, you know, specifically with Black Box, I appreciate you mentioning those things of what we can do. And other thoughts that you have on how Christ Church, individuals here at Christ Church, can play a part in the ministry of Black Box International and the work that they're doing to care for these boys?
Yeah, I think, well, the first one I've kind of already mentioned, but is kind of an obvious one, is prayer. And again, I think I said it earlier, but sometimes I'm guilty of my prayers just being, be with us, help us, you know,
right.
help them. And I think we could really get a little bit more specific with our prayers. Mm-hmm. Jesus knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he is able to answer very specific prayers. And so if we allow our imaginations to engage a little bit in our prayer, to really pray for something specific and amazing, you know.
Right.
I've always said that God parted the Red Sea, you
mm-hmm.
know. He can do crazier things
sure. yeah.
than, you know, get the attention of a human trafficker,
right?
You know,
right?
And so these things are very much a possibility. So prayer, and then the other one is, well, I'll just say this: pornography fuels this industry.
Right.
Sex trafficking only exists because there's a demand,
right?
And that kind of demand comes from a warped view of sexuality.
It does.
And so, you know, I can't imagine anybody as a kid, you know, said, I'm going to grow up and be a human trafficker. But it's only because of a pattern. And I think a lot of people think, well, you know, pornography or even just a general lust,
right?
It's not hurting anybody. You know, this is just something private. But just in engaging with that, it mm-hmm. it fuels the right. the industry, and the industry then creates the demand for people mm-hmm. to go outside of maybe outside of their marriage or
yeah.
whatever and seek these things. And yeah. so to refrain, to abstain, that's another way.
Yeah, purity in our own hearts and yeah. our own thoughts, and maybe even praying. You know, you talk about the kingdom prayers that Christ, the language that he uses in the Sermon on the Mount, when he talks about this lust, is to gouge it out, throw it away, cut it off, those sorts of things. If anything is causing you to sin, get it out of your life. And it'd be good for your own soul, for your worship of God, for your marriages or whatever your circumstances in life when it comes to these matters. But it affects people in the Caribbean, you know, 8, 9, 10-year-old boys in the Caribbean. They have become the supply to meet the demand mm-hmm. of abusers and perpetrators who want sex and this warped view of it. And yeah, that's a very powerful, sometimes hard way to make a difference, is to be pure-hearted and pure-minded when it comes to sex. Yeah. And I appreciate you bringing that up. It's a little bit taboo, you know, to talk about, sure. but it's important because it really does play a part in the lives of women and children all across the world mm-hmm. Who are not products. They're people, but they're being treated as products because a supply has to be provided to meet this demand of a warped view of sex. Mm. So I appreciate you bringing that up. And I would encourage anybody listening to this, you know, James 5:16 says, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. And so if anybody's listening to this and they have this lust in their hearts or they're dealing with pornography, to confess it and to seek prayer by a trusted friend or counselor. And would really encourage everybody who's dealing with that to engage in confession and prayer and repentance, because it will play a part in protecting maybe not these boys in the Dominican, but people. Yeah. You know, I really appreciate you sharing those thoughts on prayer and abstaining from pornography.
Absolutely.
And I want to speak for a second on Christchurch, what Christchurch is doing with Black Box. So Black Box for several years now has been a budgeted partner. We give monthly to their work and to their ministry. And the month of March, we are featuring them as the mission of the month, the partner of the month, where we're talking about their ministry. It's one of the reasons we're doing the podcast. We're going to have them in the lobby, and we're going to be giving extra to them. And so I would love to encourage anybody who wants to make a big tip to the cafe. All the tips and profits from the cafe go right to Black Box International this month. And you can give directly either at Christchurch on our CCB websites or through the Black Box International website. And we'll provide those links below in the description of this episode. And I would also love to encourage any listeners to just learn more about trafficking and become aware. You and I, Chad, we had the amazing opportunity to go and see what the problem is, but also what God is doing to right wrongs and to bring justice into the lives of these people. And the reality is not everybody has the time or the availability to go and see it and go visit with Black Box, but we all have the time to listen to podcasts, read books. Great organization is International Justice Mission. You already mentioned Rafa House, Black Box International, obviously what we're talking about right now. Three great trusted organizations, all have websites, social media accounts. Some of their leaders have written books and articles and those sorts of things. And so I would encourage you, Christchurch, to go and to read and to listen and to learn about what God is doing, about his heart for justice and how he is righting wrongs. So that's what I have for our church and my encouragement to them. Anything else you want to add?
Again, it was a heavy trip. It was a fun trip to get to yeah. know some other people from the church that I don't usually get to hang out with. But I appreciate the opportunity just to come on here and share some thoughts.
I appreciate you coming, man. You're a blessing. Really do appreciate you. Great man of God. We love that you're a part of this community, part of this church, and the work that you're doing. So thank you so much for joining us. And if anybody here listening has any questions, you can reach out to us. My email is drake.holderman@cco.church. And I would love to have further conversations with you about Black Box International. Chad, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Drake.
See you later.